Today's Perek in Tanakh is Melachim, Beit, Perek Chav Daled, which unfortunately has been destroyed by the Goyim Bible compilers, and begins, very absurdly, one pasuk too late. So we will begin from where it really begins.
Last pasuk of the previous Perek.
Ben 25 shana Yehoyakim b'molcho, ve-11 shana malach b'Yerushalayim, v'shem imo zivuda bat pedaya min ruma. And so Yehoyakim was 25 years old when he began his malchut, and he was king for 11 years in Yerushalayim, those famous 11 years that define the beginning of the Aliyah of Bavel to the Churban at the end. And his mother's name was Zevuda Bat Pedaya, who came from Ruma, which is interesting because Ruma is indeed mentioned by all people by Tiglath-Pileser, who lists Ruma, or Ruma, as one of the places where he was Kovesh in the Galil, which means that once again the Malchut of Yoshio and his children continues to be among all of the area of the original Eretz Yisrael, that he actually marries someone who comes from the Yisrael area, not from the Yehuda area. So let's consider what has happened. What happened is that, remember, the Am as a whole chose Yehoahaz and did not want, obviously, Yehoyakim to be Yehoyakim, or Eliakim, as was his name initially, to be king, even though he was the older brother. It's clear from the events that that was for a very special reason. They recognized that Eliakim was in cahoots with Paro, and that he was actually focused in his politics against everything that his father had chosen, which was Bedavka, to go out and to fight Paro Necho and to prevent Paro Necho's adding the weight of his army in Karkamish, Keneged Bavel. And this was Alpi the Navi, really, at least the original Navias to Chizkiyo, which was that Bavel was going to be the next world power. And despite the fact that certainly living in Eretz Yisrael in those days, Bavel seemed like, I mean, off the wall. Who in the world was worried about Bavel when you're living next door to Mitzrayim, which was a world power that was now in constant flux with the battles with the Assyrian Empire, with Ashur? It made a lot of sense to him to make peace with Paro, especially since his father had just been murdered by Paro in the war. So what sense did it make now to choose anything that would be seen as being on the side of Bavel? On the other hand, the Ame Haaretz, which we said were the leaders, that's the way it's used in that time, it's going to be used continuing on in the Malchus now of Yehoyakim, they recognized that that was the wrong approach, and therefore they skipped over Eliakim to choose Yehoahaz. When Paro returned, and it was only 3 months later, because we saw Yehoahaz was only king for 3 months, when Paro returned from Karkamish, he was furious at the fact that they had chosen Yehoahaz. He took Yehoahaz, threw him out of the Malchut, because now he had basically taken over, turned Israel into a vassal state, turned Yehuda into a vassal state, took now Eliakim, who was the older brother, who had been rejected by the Am, and insisted that he is the new king, and changed his name. If we learn that he changed his name, it was just an assertion. I mean, it's not much of a change. Eliakim to Yehoyakim is basically the same idea. Unless the remez is, as some say, that it was the shvua that you promised me to be loyal to me, God better help you keep that, because otherwise you're dead. So he wanted to be Metzarif to Shem Hashem, but certainly it's a sign of tremendous rulership to change somebody's name. I mean, he's going to be Koveya, the shame of the Melech, then that means that he's the one that's defining the nature of the politics, he's defining the nature of the Am, and this king is seen as a mere vassal. And indeed, Yehoyakim was happy to be that, because that was a sheet apparently, Milechatchila. The reason that we find at the end of the previous parak that Paro, in his fury, put a knas, that knas was applied by Yehoyakim to the people who had appointed Yehoahaz. So in other words, this was now Yehoyakim, the son of Yoshio, Eliakim ben Yoshio, tachat Yoshio Aviv. Why tachat Yoshio Aviv, does it say? Why doesn't it say tachat Yehoahaz? Because as far as Paro was concerned, Yehoahaz was never king. Who are these idiots that made Yehoahaz? This is my country now. Who made Yehoahaz king? The first king in the place of Yoshio is my chosen man, Eliakim, who is now called Yehoyakim, and those who have the nerve to appoint Yehoahaz shall pay, which is why Yehoyakim went indeed to the Am HaAretz to pay. All of you guys, that's what it says, Herichat HaAretz, Ish Kerako.
all you guys were the leading citizens who had now backed the wrong horse. And obviously, as soon as Paro got back, he undid it. So 3 months later, now you're going to pay for your chutzpah. So all of the silver and the gold that had been put as a knas against the Eretz were paid, viciously paid, because the Yoyakim saw to it that they paid. They were the ones who paid. And this man, Yoyakim, Vayas Harab, Enei Adonai, Kechol Asher Asu Avotav, he did everything that was bad. Just as the previous Malachim, meaning the Malachim from the Marli Mar years, which were the Malchus of Achaz and Menashe and Amon, he did those kind of things. And as a matter of fact, he did worse. So the way that the Gemara puts it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Mevakesh. If you take a look at there's two very strange openings in Yirmiyahu, in which one parak begins with Bereshit Mamlechut Yoyakim, and the other one begins with Bereshit Mamlechut of Tzidkiyo, which is the next thing. So the Gemara says this is a very unusual language. I mean, how many Malchut were there that we say Mamlechut? What exactly is this? The first Malchut? He's creating now a new Malchut. So it says the Gemara what this means is that Bikesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu to take a look at the world, lachzirat olam kula l'tovavo. And indeed, it's a new beginning. God had given up on creation because of this guy. It was horrifying. And so, because of that, if it hadn't been for his door, he stuck out the doro and it's kara da'ato. So apparently, the door of those who were loyal to Yoshio's tshuva movement, that was enough to save the world. And in Tzidkiyo, it was the opposite. Bikesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be mapech v'olam kulay l'tov avo because of doro shel Tzidkiyo, yistako b'tzidkiyo v'nitkara da'ato. Now what's interesting is that this seems to run against what it says beferish in the story of Malachim v'Tzidkiyo, who all use the same language about him as Vayasara, as we'll see. But in any event, this man is absolutely the worst. And indeed, I mean, Chazal say about what it says at the end, it never mentions that he's buried. The reason it doesn't mention that he's buried is if we take a look in Yirmiyahu, we'll see, Ko amar Hashem al-Yoyakim ben Yoshio, Melech Yuda, lo yispedulo, there won't be any hespedim over his death. And furthermore, Kvurat chamor yikaver, he will be buried like a donkey. And Sechov Yishlich Mihala L'Shara Yerushalayim. It will be dragged and thrown out on the streets. So this was the Gemara presents it as a funny story, in which they say that on the skull of Yoyakim, it had the words, Zot V'od Acheret. This, but more, there's more to come. That's what it was engraved on his skull. This is the strange story of Rufreda's grandfather, who had been walking along the entrance to Yerushalayim, and he sees a skull that's lying on the ground, and it says on it, Zot Vod Acheret, so he buries it. And what happens is that somehow or the next day, he finds it still on the top of the ground. He buries it again, keeps popping up. He says, this has got to be the skull of Yoyakim, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said it'll be like a chamor, so he's not supposed to be Zochet to Kvura. So therefore, I'm not going to bury it again. But, I mean, what am I going to do? He's still a melech. It's an inyan to be mechabi the melech. It's not correct to leave him outdoors like this. He wraps the skull in silk, and he puts it into a safe in his house. His wife opens the safe one day, and discovers the skull in the safe. She thinks, this is mad. What's the guy doing with the skull in the safe? So she tells over to her neighbor. She says, you're not going to believe what I found in my husband's safe. So the neighbor says, clearly, that's the skull of his first wife. And he loves her so much that he just can't get away from her. So she takes this skull, puts it in the oven, turns the oven up as high as it can go on the self-clean, and burns this thing up until it's ash. He comes home to find this. He says, that's why it said Zot V'od Acheret. But, I mean, the zilzul in it is just astounding. So, but, I mean, the Medrash says that, I mean, his end was that they take him to capture him, the Babylonians capture him, as we'll see. And they take him throughout all Orei Yehuda, and they cut off little pieces of him in each city to feed to the dog. And then bury him by wrapping him in the skin of a chamor. That's the kvurat chamor yikaver. So this guy was not a very popular guy in not in the country. And the fact is that he never saw himself as being accepted.
by his countrymen. It's very fascinating. He went and we actually found what is assumed to be his palace. Yirmiyahu discusses what a nasty person he is. We'll see that he's a murderer and that all of the people that were against him he killed, just like Menashe was Mala Yerushalayim blood. He was a murderer and the Tzitzit took Uriah the Navi and killed him. That's the whole story in Yirmiyahu. But they want to kill Yirmiyahu also. So Yirmiyahu gets in the views in which he's told to be Emi Bechatzar Bet Hashem. V'dibarta al kol arei Yehuda ba'im lishtachavot Bet Hashem et kol advarim ashez v'tichat v'daber alem al tikra davar. You must say everything that I tell you to say, because even though this is very dangerous to do in the current political climate, but there's a chance ulai yishmu v'yashuvu yishmi dakor ra'ah v'nichamti al ra'ah. Okay. So he has to tell them, if you don't, goes through all the introduction, and he tells them that this house is going to be Natati at Abayit HaZeki Shiloh, the city of Yerushalayim is going to be Leklala, Lechogo Yeharet. So they capture him, they want to kill him. So they grab him, the Karnim grab him over there, and they say, this kind of talk is death penalty talk. This is treachery. And so they make a Sanhedrin over there, and Yirmiyahu says, look, this is my neviyut. I have no choice but to say it. I'm warning you, you kill me, and you're going to make things even worse for yourself. So yadoa tedai imimtim atem oti, you kill me, idam naki atem notim alechem, we already know what's going to be with the blood of Zechariah. You want to kill Yirmiyahu too, you're going to really be in trouble. So the Sarim say to the Kohanim that, you know, there was somebody else who spoke like this way back in the days of Chizkiyahu, and this was Micha. So Micha said exactly these things. Bimei Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda, he said exactly the same words. Tzion Tzadeh Techaresh. We spoke about this when we were talking about the Talut of the two Neviyot of Rabbi Akiva. So Tzion Tzadeh Techaresh, Yerushalayim Yim Tiyeh Har Abayit Levamot Yar. Did Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda kill him? The people killed him? No, they tried to do teshuva. They went by Chalit Pnei Adonai, Vayinochem Adonai El Arash Shadibir Aliyim, Vanachlo Sim. This is a disaster. If our response to Neviut is to kill the messenger, I mean, that's pretty stupid. Not only that, they say, and this was terrible, they said, there was another guy who said the same thing. Uriyahu ben Shemayo from Kiryat Yarim. He said exactly the same thing. This is what Rabbi Akiva was referring to. He said exactly the same thing, and Yoyakim hears that Uriah said the same thing. Now, he didn't have enough political power to kill Yirmiyahu openly, but he did to kill Uriah. So when Uriah hears that his name had been mentioned in public, together with this trial of Yirmiyahu, so he runs away because he knows he's going to be killed. So he goes to Mitzrayim. But Yoyakim has very good relationships with Mitzrayim. So he has him extradited, and he kills him. So Vayishlach HaMelech Yoyakim Anashim Mitzrayim, and Vayotziu et Uriah miMitzrayim, Vayiviyu HaMelech Yoyakim, Vayakehu B'charev. They kill him. Not only do they kill him, he's got a great idea, Yoyakim. You know, the chutzpah of my father, who burnt Avodah Zarah and threw the ashes on the Kivrei B'nei Ha'am. I'll take this guy's corpse and throw it on the Kivrei B'nei Ha'am. That's what he does. He takes Uriah, v'yashlechet nivlato Kivrei B'nei Ha'am. Meanwhile, the people that were backing Yirmiyahu, this was Achikam ben Shafan, we already saw their loyalty previously, the days of Yoshio, they take Yirmiyahu to make sure that the mobs can't get hold of him. This is all mob rule that is trying to kill him. So this is pretty bad. So that the nature of Yehoyakim is, as Yirmiyahu says elsewhere, going around building these beautiful homes, building it on other people's work, on other people's money, and indeed it's assumed that the palace that was found in Ramat Rachel, which actually fits the description in Yirmiyahu of the type of building that he was building, is what he built. But that means that he went outside of the city. The man was basically had rejected the whole approach of his father to the point of lahachit. In other words, the failure of Yoshio that we saw was so disastrous in that people thought that this was finally a chance, and now this is the horrible end that comes to Yoshio, strengthened those who believed that it was hopeless and there was no point in trying to do anything right. And indeed, the opposite at least makes more sense. So that those that were still on the side of Yoshio, he murdered. We have the horrible tiur of the original Megillat Eicha that Yirmiyahu had written that is sent now to Yoyakim, and he sits there. It's a horrible story. And he's sitting there in his summer home, and he's cutting up pieces. As we read it, we cut out the psukim that we don't like, and we throw it into the fireplace. This is his attitude about the warning of the Korban Beis HaMikdash.
So we're talking about a man who is absolutely, just the lowest of the low, which is why he was buried that way. And, the kind of things that he does, there's machlokas as to how bad it was that he did it. But this is also the guy who had the Shem Hashem inscribed on his penis with a tattoo in order to be mavazah the Shem Hashem. This was the whole concept of the lahachis. Talked about the things that he did that nobody else would have come up with. His mad kind of lahachis issues. He was absolutely amon plus. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not Stam, wanted to get rid of Yehuda. He wanted to be Mars in the Olam, Latovavo. If things could get to this point, we don't need anybody in any world. So he's Vayas Hara, and because of that, B'yamav Alad Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel, it was in his days that we have the first appearance of Nebuchadnezzar coming all the way to Eretz Yisrael. And he had fought off Melech Mitzrayim, as we'll see, and he ends up now basically turning Mitzrayim into a hellhole in which the Paro can never exit Mitzrayim anymore. Vayilo Yoyakim Eved Shaloshanim. And so Yoyakim has to give up and become a vassal to Nebuchadnezzar for 3 years. And then he thinks that there's going to be now a Yeshua from Mitzrayim. Vayoshav Vayimrodbo. He goes out to be moreed against Nebuchadnezzar. And as we'll see, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very angry about this merida because Yirmiyahu mentioned again and again, do not attempt to fight Bavel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was appointed Bavel. Not only that, anybody who is Mekabel, the Marus of Bavel, will survive. Yerushalayim has a chance of survival if they're willing to accept that they are a vassalate to Bavel. But if they attempt to fight off Bavel, then I'm telling you right now, Yerushalayim will be destroyed, the Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed, and he goes out and he's married against Bavel. So this was Keneged Neviut after Neviut, the Farish Neviut of Yirmiyahu, who warned Yisrael that they need to be vassals to Bavel. And so Vayashalach Adonai bo et gedudei chasim vet gedudei aram vet gedudei moav vet gedudei v'nei amon. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the situation that Nebuchadnezzar had his various, at that point, those who were vassals to him. And he sends over not only various troops of the Kastim, but all of the locals that had previously been fighting Yisrael, including Aram before, Moab, Ammon, all the people who were always waiting for an opportunity to be able to eat away at Yisrael. And he sends them against Yehuda, Lahavido, Kidvar, Unai, Asher Dibyer, Biyada, Vadava, Nevi'im, just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu had warned them that through his Nevi'im, and that they mustn't act in any way against Bavel. And as Yirmiyahu said, I sent you again, Boker, Erev, every Yom Ashkem v'Shaloach, v'lo shamu elai, v'lo itu et oznam. That's the famous, that there's nothing I can do to get you. Hey, Reu me'avotam, you're worse than your forefathers were. And therefore, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Nebuchadnezzar, this is the Hamlachad Nebuchadnezzar by the Navi, therefore I'm making you, yifkadeticha hayom hazel ha'goyim v'alam hamlachot, lintosh v'lintotz v'avid v'laharot. This is now the message to Yirmiyahu. Your Neviut will be that which will define the entire nature of the political alignment in the world, a whole new idea of a Navi. And ach, al pi Adonai haita v'Yehuda. And the reason, how could people be so stupid? Because l'maisa, it was al pi Hashem, or others learned it means al af Hashem. That's keneged his word. Al pi meaning keneged. Others learned that, but since there was a gezera against Yehuda, li'asir mi al panav, as we learned in the previous parak, bechatot min Hashem kechol asher asa. Like the chatot of Menashe who had been choti u'machti, the others. And he too now is choti and machti, the others. V'gam damna. All of the Dam Naki that Menashe had spilled. We know that Yehoyakim was a murderer, a vicious, vicious man who liked nobody and nobody liked him. He was the utter end of the Malchus in the sense of he no longer pretended to be a Melech of the Am. He was a Melech by virtue of having been appointed by Paro. So he was literally Gestapo. He was a capo. He was not a Melech of Yehuda in any way. So all he was interested in was murdering all of the opposition, taking all of the money that he could to build a nice little life for himself, outside of the painful areas where he would have to face those who were against him. And this is the complete dissolution of the Malchut. And the blood, the innocent blood, Asher Shafach Vayamaleh at Yerushalayim Dam Naki, V'lo Aba Adonai L'Sloach, particularly for that, we know that Yoyakim also was involved, just like he killed Uriah and wanted to kill Yirmiyahu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu refused to forgive that. The Yeter Divrei Yoyakim, V'chol Asher Asa, that is Merumas in the V'chol Asher Asa, as we learned in the in the that he did yeter divrei, he did even worse than the other malachim. So again, as I said, that's a machlokes, different arayas that he was over on, or this crazy tattoo that he had written, but the way in which he went beyond other malachim. Aloheim kitavim al sefer divrei yamim lemalchei Yehuda vayishkav Yehoyakim emavotav, and note that it doesn't say anything about his having been buried. Vayimloch Yehoyakim benotatav, and his son Yehoyakim becomes king, but at this point there was no longer been any hope of making a brit with Mitzrayim. Velohosif od melech Mitzrayim letzit miartzo, and we'll see that this is a necessary hagdama to what was happening with Yehoyakim, and that melech Mitzrayim could no longer even go out to war. Kilakach melech Bavel minacha Mitzrayim ad nahar Parat kol hashar etal melech Mitzrayim. At this point, Nebuchadnezzar had succeeded in making Bavel the empire that was sholei from nahar Parat all the way to nahar Mitzrayim, which of course is the real Gvulas of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, it would be absurd for somebody to be moreed against the Malchus of Nebuchadnezzar, or so one would think. Where Yoshio loses contact with the people in believing that his own tzidkus is the tzidkus of the Am, there's not even an attempt to view himself as an extension of the people. On the contrary, the people who want anybody want his brother, and therefore he hates them. There's no interest in them. All he wants to do is admonish them in the name of power, of course.
Aren't these things are in them? This Am
Aretz? Yes.
The same time we're protecting
Yoshio. Sure. Yes. These are the Ame Aretz are going to pay, and many of them paid with their lives, as we see elsewhere. In the Ramazim and Yirmiyo, they paid with their lives for fighting him, for remaining loyal to Yoshio and to Yoakaz. He was a mass murderer, man. Literally a Nazi, not a Melech Yisrael. Frightening, though. Now, in the parallel perek in Lamed Vov in Divrei Hayomim, it says that Allah v'alam Nebuchadnezzar melech Bavel v'yasreyu b'nechushtayim lo lichol Bavel, that he took him in chains, in irons, to drag him off to Bavel, and at the same time he claimed Beit Hashem evi Nebuchadnezzar l'Bavel. So that he took, even at that time, when he took Yehoyakim, he had already begun eating away at the Klei Beit Hashem. So we'll see that this is really, we don't usually view this as the beginning of Galut. The reason we don't view it as the beginning of Galut is because this was aimed specifically at this couple, not really at Yisrael. The next time the Nebuchadnezzar comes, even though it's still not time for the Churban Beis HaMikdash, that's viewed as the beginning of Galut itself, which is Yechoniah, the other name for Yehoyachin, basically the same word, Yechoniah or Yehoyachin. So that his end is indeed to become literally eaten away by the king of Bavel, who makes the point of being Mekayim, the Nevius of Yirmiyahu, on him. Ba'et ha'yih alu avdei Nebuchadnezzar melech Bavel Yerushalayim v'tavo ha'ir b'matzor. And so at that time, Nebuchadnezzar sends his soldiers to Yerushalayim and put the city into siege. It's very unclear what happened, because the hamlacha of Yehoyachin, after we find the death of Yehoyachin, in the hands, really, of the soldiers of Bavel, was done as part of what it was that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And yet, here it says he was only king for 3 months, and after those 3 months, Avdei Nebuchadnezzar come. What happened during the course of those 3 months? That is not at all clear. So the Medrash says that nothing happened, actually. The only thing that happened is that Nebuchadnezzar returns to Bavel. This is the period in which Nebuchadnezzar is coming into his own, these first years of Nebuchadnezzar. So this is early in the career of Nebuchadnezzar, when he's still politicized, and he still needs to answer to people. He comes back to Bavel, and they asked him how he dealt with the Judeans. And what's amazing, by the way, is that all of this is written up in the Bavel records. Can they say, so how did you deal with the problem of Yehoyakim? He said, well, we fixed him, and we took his son, and we made his son the king. Yehoyachin, so he was now supposed to be a vassal of Nebuchadnezzar. So they said to him, look, you know, there's a common saying that says if the bitch is no good, neither is the son. So you don't want to raise a pup of a rotten bitch. So he said, you're right, let's get rid of him. So he turns around and goes back to Yerushalayim. And at this point, Sanhedrin comes out, and they believe that this is a siman that the time of the Churban has come, because there's a siege around the city. Now, up until this time, these 3 months, all we see about him is Vayas Harab Enei Hashem, and then Ba'etahi. But that's only a reference to Ba'etahi after the 3 months, because there was more like 3 months. So how much Ra can you really do in 3 months? So at this point, indeed, the Nebuchadnezzar came, and he tells Sanhedrin, no, it's not necessarily time for the Bayit to be Nechra. That wasn't the Nevi'ahs that I'm basically acting on. As we'll see later on, there was a sense of mission that he had in this. All I want right now is Yehoyachin. Now, by the way, at this point, they didn't call him Yehoyachin. They called him Yechoniah, which is the same thing, except backwards. And we find that referenced in Yirmiyahu and in other places, is always referred to as Yechoniah instead of Yehoyachin. So don't get confused. It's one and the same guy. So he says to them, all I want is Yechoniah. Give him to me, and I leave. Now, this is not an easy chore. I mean, he's the king. They're asking for the king and his wife and his family. I mean, so what are they going to do? So they go to the king, and they say, look, Nebuchadnezzar is asking particularly for you. And amazingly, Yechoniah goes to the Beis HaMikdash. This is a medrash that occurs later at the time of the second Beis HaMikdash with the Kayanim, but its makor is originally in the medrash of Yechoniah. Takes the maftechot to the Beis HaMikdash, throws them up to the Shammai, and says, if we're not considered to be Gizborim Ne'emanim, so then take the keys back, because I am doing the best I can. So he really believed, amazingly. Again, he's called Vayasa Rabbi Ne'ashem, and we're going to see with Tzidkiyahu, where Chazal consider him to be a tzad Gomor. It says the same lashon. Vayasa Rabbi Ne'ashem. So the words that are used need to be seen very, very much relative to the demands and relative to the requirements and the conditions of the time that we're saying. So here's a man, he goes to the Beis HaMikdash and says, I've tried my best, there's nothing I can do. Some say that indeed a symbol of a hand came in HaShemayim and took those keys. And the others say that he threw the keys up and they just disappeared. They never came down again. And he goes out, and he indeed goes, and he presents himself to the Nebuchadnezzar with his family, entire family. His mother, everything that was left in the Malchus. Nebuchadnezzar takes him to Bavel. He comes to Bavel, and there, and we're going to see what happens first. Let's take a look at the Matzor. There's a siege. Now, after a while, the city is now softened. And remember that the derech was that after a siege, they always wait for the king to arrive. And he himself comes. They've already set up now the siege and softened the city. And it's here that Vayetze Yehoyachin Melech Yehuda al Melech Bavel, he comes out and presents himself in peace to the king of Bavel, who he brings his mother, he brings all of the avodim, meaning the leading people in the palace that were in part of the government, the entire bureaucracy, Sarav, all of the ministers, Sarisav, Vayikach ito Melech Bavel bishnat shmona lemalcho. And the king, Nebuchadnezzar, takes them in the 8th year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, and he brings them to Bavel. He takes there all of the otzarot. Just as Yishayahu HaNavi had said to Chizkiyahu after he showed the messengers from Bavel who were bringing him gifts and were recognizing the tremendous nace that had been done with Sancheriv and with curing him and with the sun now making the simon of the shadow going backwards. So Yishayahu had warned them in a yamim ba'im v'nisa kol asher beveitecha plus asher atzru avotecha ad hayom hazeh bavela. And this was the kiyum of that nevius. This was the first stage of the golus of Yerushalayim, but did not result in the churban of the Beis HaMikdash. However, what Nebuchadnezzar did was v'yiglat kol Yerushalayim v'et kol hasarim ve'et kol gibure hachayel aseret alafim gole v'chol hecharash v'hamasker Lonish Arzulat Dalat Amaret. Now Chazal say that this was tremendous, tremendous chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because in separating the stages of the Golos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved the existence of Yehuda and of Malchus Yehuda. Because had it not been that there was the period in advance in which Bavel was provided for by Yechoniahu and the Sanhedrin, which is the Chorash and the Masger, which Chazal, the portion of the meaning of Chorash and Masger, is the Chorash are the weapon makers. We find the same thing with the Plishtim earlier, when it says in the Pasuk Beferish there were no weapons because the Chorash, there were no Chorash. So it's clear that that's definitely used as the workmen, the artisans, who were able to use weapons. So on the simple level, the Pasuk is talking about bringing all of the industrial power of Yerushalayim and Yehuda to Bavel, which left them now bereft of their own ability to make weapons of war. The Masger would be the same thing. Masger would be people that were skilled in building fortresses and so on.
Chazal understand the remez of the Harash u'Masgir because of the Yukim, the Psukim, differences in the numbers and whether they're included in the Giborei HaChayil, as being the Harash u'Masgir in Torah. So Harash, according to Chazal, means they who, when they speak, everyone else becomes deaf and dumb, meaning they can't argue. And they're the Masgir once that's the Sanhedrin that paskins a halacha, nobody can sit and argue about it. Kivanch is so green, if they have paskins, so then no one can come to be poteach. Fine. This, according to Chazal, was the tremendous chesed she'asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Yisrael, is that he was hikdim this golus to the ultimate golus, which will come only later. And all of those years, there was now the chance to build up schools and yeshivas and leadership, political power, so that the Jews would be protected, which turned the golus Bavel into something very similar to the golus of America today. So that it was the amazing chesed, which we see here only as a disaster. And we don't understand really the background of what's going on. But at this point, all of the inyanim of the Beis HaMikdash were taken away, so that the value of the gold and so on was taken away. And he took out all of the powerful people, all of the Sorim, all of the leading of the army. 10,000 of these leaders would be Golet, including the entire Sanhedrin and Chachomim, the Harash and the Masgir, leaving only Lo Nishar Zulat Dalat Amaret, the weakest and poorest people, were left behind. And this left them, of course, unable to do anything, because they could now, there was nobody to organize, there was no leadership, there was nothing at all that was left behind. And there's another remez over here which is very beautiful, and that is that it says in the pasuk that Vayishkeid Hashem al ha'ra'ah ki tzadik Hashem Elokeinu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu acted with great intensity and alacrity to bring the evil on us because he's such a tzaddik. Yes, the Gemara, what? What do you mean? Because he's such a tzaddik, so therefore he did this? Yes, said the Gemara, because what he did here was a great tzedakah, first of all, because he was mocked in this golus to set up now the potential for the rebuilding. And because of that, it's a tremendous tzedakah. And there's another beautiful remez, and that is that this came now at the end of 850 years of the Maimer of Venoshantem Baharat. Venoshantem is, of course, what we just read in the Haftarah, that's the klola that you're going to be thrown out of Eretz Yisrael, and it's going to be permanent. Over here, the gematria of Venoshantem is 852. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was makdim that we shouldn't get to a dargav where it will be Venoshantem, so we could leave 2 years before, at the end of 850 years instead, and that made all the difference in the world, because then it would be possible to have a tikuma, which otherwise we wouldn't have been able to have. So there were many inyanim over that were merumas as a tremendous tzedakah that was done for Klal Yisrael by doing this. Vayegel et Yehoyachin Bavela, and so Yehoyachin was brought to Bavel together with his mother, who was obviously, we keep referring to her because she apparently was a gvira, no, she was a matriarch, and people looked up to her as like a queen mother. Vet Ema Melech, Vet Nishea Melech, Vet Serisav, and the Elei Haaretz. Now this has become now a modern term, it's the only place it's used. The Elei Haaretz, the like we use today, the powerful ones in the world of industry and so on. So the Elei Haaretz, Holich Golam Yerushalayim, he took as part of the Galut from Yerushalayim, and this was the time that the Gemara says, I mean the Pasuk says that this was the Galus, Ima Galut, Asher Aglata, Im Yechonya Melech Yehuda, where Mordechai decided to join them, even though he wasn't chashiv enough to be taken by him. It was Golam Yatzmo, Im HaGolah. This was the Golam Yerushalayim, Bavela. Ve'it kol Anshei Achayel, Shivat Alafim, and all of the Anshei Achayel, 7,000 now. Before it said that it was 10,000, Aseret Alafim. And here it says, Shivat Alafim. So elsewhere, the Pazrashi explains, the Pasuk is b'chalik between those from Yehuda and those from the rest of Eretz Yisrael. Because remember that Binyamin, obviously the entire Binyamin was here. And we know that Yoshio had already gone back and included the Aseret HaShvatim in the Melucha. So that Aseret Alafim includes now both Yehuda and the other Shvatim. And we still keep them separate in the count. V'acharash v'amasker elef, and there were 1,000 of these very high-level Chachomim and Sanhedrin that also went along. Hakol giborim osei milchama, v'yivyei melech bavel gola bavela, the king brings them into Galut in Bavel.
and leaves behind now not the family of Jehoiakim, who he felt was untrustworthy, but rather goes back now to the uncle. Vayamlech melech bavel et Mataniyahu dodo tachtav. Instead, he goes back now to the uncle, back to Yoshiyahu, and makes now the previous door the king, Mataniyahu, and changes the name of Mataniyahu to Tzidkiyahu. Vayasev et shmo Tzidkiyahu. And Chazal said the reason that he called him Tzidkiyahu was to say, look, I've had a lot of trouble from this family. You don't keep your promises. So I'm telling you right now, Tzidkiyahu means ko should be matzdik the din alecha, what I am going to do to you, if you also are Meirid B. Because I cannot take another guy who lies. And that's exactly, of course, what Tzidkiyahu does, and it brings disaster on all of Eretz Yisrael. And this was the, interestingly enough, this is what the Navi Yirmiyahu focuses on as the main chait of the Ra that we're talking about at this point was a lack of integrity. We never get to any type of destruction of him like we'll find by Tzidkiyahu, like we find by Jehoiakim torn to shreds, Tzidkiyahu blinded and his children killed and in front of his eyes, and the horrible ends. Clearly, Yechoniahu, indeed, was not part of all of this. So Chazal say that what happened was that when he brings Jehoiakim, the Harash and Masger, immediately it started now making political inroads, and the approach that they took, fascinatingly, was that they knew that his prisons, the Nebuchadnezzar's prisons, were basically the archipelago. Nobody ever got out once they were thrown in. And he saw that all of these people, including the Malachim, were thrown in there. The Gemara says horrible things. Nebuchadnezzar used to come down and rape all of the kings just to show them who was boss. And there was Cholesh al-Goyim. He used to have lotteries every day. Who's he going to rape today? I mean, the guy was horrific. So that what they did is they went to his wife. And they started being makarev of his wife and paying a lot of attention to his wife until they were mamish makarev. They get her on their side. So then Nebuchadnezzar comes in now to sleep with his own wife. So she says to him, you know, I don't get it. You act like a king and I'm the queen, and that honor you give yourself. And tell me, this Yechoniahu, he's not a king and he doesn't have a right to have visits by his wife? What kind of business is that? And so Nebuchadnezzar sort of pushed into the corner by his wife to at least now relate to Jehoiakim. So he has to lay off Jehoiakim. Now what happens is that indeed they decide that they're going to give him conjugal rights in the dungeon. Conjugal rights in the dungeon are not very much fun because the dungeon has enough room to stand in. You can't even lie down in the dungeon. So what happens is a machlokas between two amoraim, whether they actually had a lever that they could open up, they could lower his wife into it, or they had to actually break through into this dungeon to get her into the dungeon. In any event, they get her into the dungeon. Now, what they're scared of is that there's not going to be any future for Malchus Beis David, because they understand that if what happens to Tzidkiyahu is going to destroy his heirs, and they're worried about Tzidkiyahu, and that's indeed what happens. In the end, Malchus Beis David is kept through Yechoniahu. So what happens is they lower his wife there, and he has with her Sha'altiel. Sha'altiel becomes now the leader, this is according to Chazal, he's the Chemia, and becomes the beginning of the rebuilding of Malchus Beis David. And the reason that he's called Sha'altiel in the Gemara is because normally you don't get pregnant from sleeping with somebody standing up. Over here, Sha'altiel Shittalo El, God pushed him in there, Shalo Kedorach HaNishtalim. But what's amazing is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had sworn out of his hatred for Yechoniahu, and this, by the way, may be the reason we refer to him by two different names. Because we know in Hilchos Teshuva that it's possible to change a gezeira as if to say, I'm somebody else. I'm not the same person. So Yehoiachin and Yechoniah appear in the pasuk to be two different people, even though they're the same person. So what happens? They lower her. The first time they lower her in, so he's about to sleep with her, and she suddenly says to him, one second, I just felt like I became Anita. She checks herself, and she sees a tiny drop of blood. So she says to him, Kishoshana aduma ra'iti. And he immediately is purish from her. I'm waiting until she was soferet, she was soferet, shivat nekiyim, which was the big chumra already. So now she's keeping the big chumra to be soferet, shivat nekiyim on one drop of blood. She goes to the mikveh, and only then comes back. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Birushalayim, lo kiyamtem mitzvah snifa. This is crazy. So while you were in Yerushalayim, as vayasar ha'bein Hashem, then you didn't care. Now, all of a sudden, not only you mekayim, but with such mesiras nefesh, under these conditions, after everything they went through to get her into you, to try to get her pregnant, so that
should be it. And it was all only in order that there should be a kiyum for Malchus Beis David. It's clear that Nebuchadnezzar was doing whatever he could to make sure that there would be a kiyum. Otherwise, why don't you just make it a vassal state installer governor, right? So he did not have, either because he felt he would have a tremendous rebellion on his hand, or because there were some other elements in which the overall approach, we see this later on at the time of Koresh, the Bavel approach was always, it became more and more that way, to try to, as they expanded, to try to keep local populations wanting to be part of Bavel. In the end, remember what Nebuchadnezzar does when he creates his beautiful statue of the new Pan-Bavel Union with his symphony orchestra and the whole thing that's there, that is described now in Daniel, with this massive symphony and people attending from all over the world. And this is something that is the beginning of the period which comes to its head in the time of Achashverosh, and then even worse among the Greeks, where it becomes entirely a function of popular following. This was the beginning of an approach in which kibush was done in a totally different way than the kibush of Ashur. Remember that what Sancheriv did was to actually tear apart populations, leave them no hope, and then have them in other worlds where he could rule over them as he wished. That approach, apparently, was seen, first of all, as benighted, as the world was getting more liberal, and you could see that in every way, in terms of the architecture, the dreams, the literature. People were becoming enlightened, but that enlightenment goes hand in hand with political expediency, obviously. In other words, it became more and more expedient to allow people their own lives, which, by the way, is always part of enlightenment. It's the same thing as today. As you become more liberal, the best way to control people is by giving them freedom and just making sure they think the right way. So you have everybody thinks the same way, believing that they're really thinking for themselves. So this becomes the most tremendous giloy at the time for him, in which he goes out of his way to make sure that there's instantaneous translations into 127 different languages, and everybody's given his own way of doing things at the big party of Achashverosh. So you see to what extent this became an operative principle. It's the reason that in the end the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt. Because the Koresh proclamation, historically, was not a proclamation to the Jews alone. He sent out exactly the same proclamation to every civilization that they had taken over. To write them, we now have freedom of religion, and we have government-sponsored freedom of religion. If there have been any temples that have been destroyed by the central government, we're going to rebuild them, and so on. So this is part of the coming back to Eretz Yisrael. And it begins here, in which as long as you just act like a mensch, I'll protect you. And he didn't want to destroy Malchus Yehuda. It wasn't kedai for him. And therefore, the merida against him, and the Navi says this to Farish, accept the fact that you are a mamlacha shifela. You're a low-class third-world country. Stop thinking in terms of dominion. Stop thinking in terms of your grand plans. We saw this earlier with Chizkiyo. It's time to look inward, not to look outward. The tikkunim that are made have to be made inside. So that it turns out that the going into the galut, exactly as it says over here, when you're in Yerushalayim, then you have no time for mitzvahs. So all of a sudden you come here, now you have time for mitzvahs. No, that's exactly what I'm telling you guys. This is the only way that you know how to live. You can't live, given your independence. You're independent and you start acting like a bunch of idiots. Yechonyo was such a Russia that we find that Yirmiyahu says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has sworn that he doesn't have a chance. He'll never have any children, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to wipe them out. I mean, listen to the words of Yirmiyahu. Chai ani nu'um Hashem, ki im yeh kanayo. He won't even give him the Yechonyo, because that would mean that he will be built, but he won't be built. So he calls him Kanayo. Melech Yehuda, chotam ayad yemini. I don't care if I was wearing him as the signet on my right ring, my right hand. Kimisham et kencha, I'll rip him off and throw him away. Unetaticha biyad mevakshei nafshecha, I'm going to give you over into the hands of the ones who want you, the ones that you're so frightened of. Biyad asher ata yagur mipnei biyad nevuchadretza melech bavel, biyad akastim. And I'll get rid of you. Hitalti otcha vetimcha asher yeladatcha. Ala aretz acheret asher lo yuladtem sham. V'sham tamutu, you'll die there.
and no one will ever think of you again. They're dreaming of one day coming back to Eretz Yisrael. They'll never come back. And then he speaks to Eretz Yisrael. Eretz, Eretz, Eretz. Shimi Dvar Hashem. Ko Amar Hashem. Kitvu et ha'ish hazeh ariri. Write this man down permanently as childless. Geber lo yitzlach biyamav. A man who will never be successful in his days. Ki lo yitzlach mizaro ish yosheva kisei David. Umashalot biyuda. From his children there will never be a man who will now be a Moshel in Yehuda. Now, astonishingly, exactly the opposite comes out. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes now, let's read it inside. Now, what do we find in Haggai? Yafachti kisei mamlachot vishmati chozek mamlachot agoyim. Bayom ahu ne'um Hashem tzvakot. Ekochacha zrubavel ben sha'altiel avdi v'samticha kachutam. Amazing. The same lashon. If he'll be a chotam b'yad yemini, I'll throw him out. That same lashon is used to say, this is the man that is going to be my chotam. And this, Ram Rashi points this out. In Yirmiyahu, on that curse, that v'nish'al HaKadosh Baruch Hu asher dikshva. HaKadosh Baruch Hu shoal on his shvua. That he said, kitvu ateisha ze ariri. That after he did teshuva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mekabelim and turned it completely around so that he indeed was the one to be the source of Sha'altiel, the coming back, and in the end, Zerubbabel was the son of Sha'altiel, all from this disappearing Yechoniah in the middle of Babel. This last bit is recorded in the Chronicles, actually, of Babel itself, where it says, in the seventh year, in the month of Kislev, the king of Akkadia gathered his army, went to the land of the Yehuda, came to the city of Yehuda, and in the month of Adar, on the second day, captured the city, took the king, meaning Yehoyachin, captured him, and put a king after his own heart into place. This is a reference, of course, to Tzidkiyahu. Placed a heavy fine and brought all to Bavel. And this is a fascinating relationship, really, because what happened is when he brought Tzidkiyahu, when he made Tzidkiyahu Melech, he never officially unmade the Malchus of Yehoyachin. And in fact, throughout the entire period, he is really called Melech Yehuda. He's referred to as Melech Yehuda. We talked about the Medrash, about how his wife told him, and you don't treat now Yehoyachin as a Melech. He too is a Melech. And he had to accept that. As a matter of fact, as we're going to see very soon, it doesn't take very long for the king of Bavel later to actually recognize Yehoyachin, take him out of prison, and make him one of the most important people there. So besides the horrific problem of putting Tzidkiyahu into a terrible bind in which he's a king, but he's not the only king, it also means that there's a very ambivalent relationship that we have between Nebuchadnezzar and Yehoyachin as well. And this is an ambivalence that extends further into the times of Tzidkiyahu, as we'll see. Part of that ambivalence is actually recorded in Josephus, where we talked about the Medrash. The Medrash said that when he came back because of that whole story of don't take a pup that's the son of a bad bitch. And actually in Josephus it says that after the king of the Babylonians gave Yehoyachin the kingdom, he was suddenly seized with a terrible fear because he was afraid that perhaps the king would attempt to rebel against him because he had murdered his father. And therefore, and of course we read that that was in a horrible way, and so there was what to be afraid of. And therefore he sent the army back, and he placed Yehoyachin in siege. So it's clear that he's so confused about Yehoyachin that that return after 3 months is part of the general ambivalence. It's part of the ambivalence of the way in which Nebuchadnezzar relates to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. We're going to see more of this in Daniel. And as the Gemara tells us, Nebuchadnezzar's songs were better than David HaMelech's Tehillim. And they had to put a stop to it in the Shemaim because he was going to actually drown out David. It's an astonishing idea, which it's difficult for people to relate to, and all they remember of Nebuchadnezzar is the horror of his personality, which again we'll talk about when we get to Daniel. But in any event, we now reach the stage of Tzidkiyahu, and here we begin now after the break. There's now a Parshas Tuma, and we begin in Posuk Yudchet. Ben Esrim Vachat Shana Tzidkiyahu B'Malcho. He was now 21 years old when he became king. Vachat Esrei Shana Malach B'Yerushalayim, and was king for 11 years. During those 11 years, there was all the time to make the tremendous difference between what happened in the Golus of the Aseret HaShvatim, where all that happened is that they never returned and were destroyed, and the Galut of Yehuda, in which what actually happened were that the roots were placed for the rebuilding of the Am and of Yerushalayim. V'shem imo chamutal bat Yirmiyah milivna. V'yas harabe inei Adonai, and he did all that was bad, k'chol asher asah Yehoyakim, as everything that Yehoyakim himself had done as well. A vicious, vicious man. Now the truth is that the Gemara tells us, though that there is a machloket, but the Gemara tells us that actually Tzidkiyahu was, according to some, was called Shalom. We find the name Shalom, there's a machloket, but according to the Gemara, though, Shalom is Tzidkiyahu, and he's called Shalom because of the fact that he was a shaling, he was such a tzaddik. On the other hand, the Gemara says the only good thing that we find that Tzidkiyahu did is that he rescued Yirmiyahu from the boar. Now, Rotosis explains over there that doesn't mean that's the only thing he did. It means it's the only thing that's recorded in Yirmiyahu that he did, so that we're not aware of what his titkut actually is. But this man, who is a Tomim, did here nonetheless it says Vayas Hara. And the reason that it was Vayasar, I mean, the thing that he really did, as we'll see, is defined actually in Divrei Hayamim as well. For there it says that not simply the Vayasara, but rather Vayasara b'nei Hashem alokav lo nichna milifnei Yirmiyahu anavi mipi Hashem. A, gam b'melech Nebuchadnezzar marad. B, and what he did was violated the shvua asher hishbiyo be'Elohim. And C, vayakesh et orpo v'yametzet lavo mishuv el Hashem elokei Yisrael. He refused to do teshuva. So these three things are separately listed. The story, the detailed story, is only in Yirmiyahu of the interaction between Tzidkiyahu and Yirmiyahu, which was simply horrific, in that all of the other Levitim, via Sheker, it was difficult for them to distinguish between them, were claiming that everything was going to be fine, and there were those who wanted to kill Yirmiyahu, and he was put, in fact, by Tzidkiyahu himself, into prison, and Yitzchak tells him, "Why are you saying Koamar Hashem and not Inatigras Opiad Melach Bavel Al Chada?" And Yirmiyahu tells Tzidkiyahu in another location when he asks him to say what it was that Hashem told him. He said, "If I tell you, you're going to kill me, and if I give you any etzot, lo tishmaila, you're not going to listen to me anyway." Yet on the other hand, we know that Tzidkiyahu was the one who made sure that he was taken well care of, Yirmiyahu, and that when everybody else was trying to kill him, he rescued him, and he told him it is secretly to tell him what it was. It was very secret, and he swears to him, B'shem Hashem, Chai Hashem, that I will never give you into the hands of the people that are trying to kill you, and you have to tell me the honest truth of what it was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you. And he in secret sends Eved Melech HaKushi with 30 people to take Yirmiyahu out of the dungeon before it's too late. And all types of confusion in terms of his attitude. And indeed, it's because of this we find Tzidkiyahu throughout to be a person who's put under horrific pressures from every side. He does not have, remember, the benefit of any of the advisors that had experience. They were all taken by Nebuchadnezzar and brought with Charash and Masger to Bavel. And so here he is, a young king, without the benefit of real insight. Doesn't have anyone that he can speak to except the one man who is being menabe, that the end is here and that there's nothing to do and that it's a gzeira and that it's too late. On the other hand, he's right next door to Mitzrayim, and Mitzrayim is still pushing, trust us, trust us. We'll send you soldiers, we'll send you horses. And he's being pressured by those who are loyal to Yehoniahu and who are trying to drag him down. And so we see again and again, even when he talks to Yirmiyahu, he says, "You can't let anybody know." I mean, it's pathetic. when we see the way that Tzidkiyahu speaks to Yirmiyahu in Yirmiyahu, and he tells him, Ish ayedah b'dvorim ha'eleh v'lo tamud, nobody can know. If they come and they ask you, all the sarim, they're going to come, they say, we heard the king spoke to you. Well, what'd you tell him? Tell us. Don't worry, everything will be fine. Agirin alanu. Don't worry, you gotta lie to them. You have to tell them, oh, I just went to the king to beg for my life and to ask him not to put me back into the dungeon because I'm not going to be able to survive any further incarcerment there. It's clear that he is running scared, Tzidkiyahu, that he simply doesn't have clarity, has no idea what to do, and so the way the Gemara puts it is that actually, why is he considered here lasot harabe ne Hashem, says the Gemara, because hayolo limchot v'lo macha, he had the opportunity to be mocheh against all of the sarim and against his door. And in fact, there's the other Gemara which we mentioned before, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mistakel b'doro shel Tzidkiyahu and wanted to destroy them, and was wanted to be destroy the entire world to avavo, and then it was mistakel b'Tzidkiyahu, and the fact that Tzidkiyahu was such a sweetheart that made him feel better and was matzil the oilam. So it's clear that there was a tremendous pressure of the door against Tzidkiyahu, very much the same thing that we find in the end of the period of the Aseret HaShvatim. So there too, Hoshea ben Elah was really, compared to the others, a nice guy in the sense that he took away the policemen and allowed people to go up to Beit HaMikdash. At that point already was the Am that were Chayitei, and that was the end. That was the Bekor of the Gezerah. And so too over here, it was the Am that now pushed everything over the edge, and we move away now from the centrality of the Melech. And indeed, the other man, the Omar, the old Shalom, as Tzidkiyahu gives a terrible other explanation, that Shalom means the Yamav Nishlema Malchut Beit David, that was the end of Malchut Beit David in his days. And as a matter of fact, as we mentioned, Malchut Beit David is only revived from Bavel, from Shealtiel, from Nehemiah, and so on. And so, truly, Tzidkiyahu is something of an anomaly, a king who's not an only king, a man who is defined as Ra, but who actually was someone that we look at as being an Adam Shalem and a good person. Someone who desires, on the one hand, desperately to know what Yirmiyahu has to say to him, and yet on the other hand is completely wrapped up in his political fears and cannot now come back to tell others what to do, which was another reason that the Gemara says he was at Sarashis, he was Tzadik Gomor, he was one of the, according to the Gemara and Sukkah, he's one of the Shmona Nesichei Adam, which means that there's a vision of him in the ultimate eschatology of Yisrael, in which the Milchemes Gog Magog and the final Yeshua allows him to come back into his place. And on the other hand, it's just simply amazing the amount of ambivalence there is about it. It's interesting that even in Josephus we find the same thing. Josephus in one place says that the king to himself was an amazingly noble and good person who wouldn't allow himself to get angry or to take revenge, and yet he was afraid, and everyone around him were Rishoyim, and he allowed the people to do what they wanted without ever telling them otherwise, and allowed the most absurdly liberal laws in which there would be no attempt to do what was right. There was none of the tzedek that was David HaMelech, and in the end, of course, it's lasot tzedakah, which was the special brit with Avram Avinu, that we found Magen Avraham became Magen David, and all those who followed David was the getter of Asiyas HaMishpat and the idea of Chesed throughout the Aretz. It was this that he was unable to pursue, and because of that, we call him basically Ra. But as the Pasuk continues to explain, the reason that this had happened was because HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want there to be anything, any chance for him. Because after all, at this point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was simply angry. And he was filled with anger against Yerushalayim and Yehuda, to the point where he was just waiting. Ad hashlichot ha-me'al banav, he wished only to get them away from his face. And because of that, Vayimro Tzidkiyahu b'melech Bavel, Tzidkiyahu did the most horrible thing of all. He was morid against the king of Bavel. Now the Merida, it says in Yecheskel, that the Merida was Vayimro bo lishloach malachav Mitzrayim, latit lo susim v'amrav. He went again, foolishly, to Mitzrayim. And as Yechezkel put, someone who is after his nishba, hayitzlach, hayimaleto se'ele, is it possible ve'efer brit v'nimlad? Can a man turn his back against the covenant and escape whole? So he says with horror. And indeed we know that there's another brit, which Yirmiyahu mentioned in Lamed Dalet, Vayedaber Yirmiyahu Hanavi El Tzidkiyahu Melech Yehudah, and speaks about the great brit that they made. This is after Tzidkiyahu apparently now made a brit with all of the people in Yerushalayim to let go of their avadim that they had taken, Ish, Avdo, Shifchato, Ivri, Vayivriya. They all promised that they're going to send them chofshi. They did, and then they went and they took them back again. It was just like a big show. And there HaKadosh Baruch Hu also speaks of a farata brit. Says, Anochi karati brit et avotechem yom otziotam eretz mitzrayim mibeit avadim. And this was the brit miket sheva shanim teshachu ish et achiv. And today you finally acted like a mensch. Yeah, before you acted like a mensch, likro dror ish l'reyu, and you were kares of brit in the Beit HaMikdash. And then, v'teshuvu v'techalu et shemi. This is what you do, what achil Hashem, to be over on a brit that not only was the brit of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, but was the brit of the special tshuva that you were trying to achieve here in the Beit HaMikdash. So there is an overall sense of a lack of integrity that we've seen has been continuing along in this family, in which a melech who gives his word, this we saw by Yehoshua, you give your word for a brit, even though you were lied to get into that brit. You keep that brit. And this was even when they were fooled originally, they had to accept now those who had pretended to come, Eretz Rechokan, the horrors that happened because of the Givonim and the destruction of Shaul's family and the Kal Vachomer that the Gemara tells us that Goyim made that turned them into Gerim, and they said this is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu that Klal Yisrael treats even Gerim Gurim that were liars, and nonetheless they will punish the Mishpachat HaMlucha for not caring for them sufficiently. This is astonishing. That is the level that is demanded from the Malchut in terms of integrity. That's the essence of identity, is that integrity. The loss of that integrity was horrific. So that's the open political element of the Merida. We know that Chazal tell us that the Merida was actually very, very personal. It was against Nebuchadnezzar himself. And here, once again, we find the strange relationship that Nebuchadnezzar had with Yehuda. It was something that was profoundly attractive to the Bavli and Bichlal. And this we find with the whole idea of that we read about later, about Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Daniel. He was in love with the people of Yehuda, brought only the best, wanted them to be part of his own maluch. In the end, turned to them for advice. They were the ones that he loved more than any. There was something about him that was profoundly attracted to Malchus Yehuda, and that had a connection through it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. And that personal element, we know that there's two approaches. I mean, in the Gemara in the Dorim says that there was a very strange story, that Tzidkiyahu found that Nebuchadnezzar was eating Eber Menachai, and he would love to eat live rabbit. And Nebuchadnezzar had obviously allowed himself to be vulnerable to Tzidkiyahu's presence. So he tells Tzidkiyahu, you know, look, you have to swear to me that you're never going to tell anybody about this, and I've got a problem with food. And there's also another, there's a medrash in the Tanchuma that doesn't mention live rabbit, but talks about Tzidkiyahu's being invited to a special meal by a witness who had netzer together, and who tells him, listen, we eat differently in Bavel. This is when he came up to bring him the tribute that was mentioned earlier. So he says, you know, look, you got to see how we eat barbecues. And he sees the Nebuchadnezzar eating with the most insane bulimia, and he's got this saliva dripping now over his face, down his beard. And Tzidkiyahu is looking at this guy, and he's nauseated, and he's saying, a low life like this, the entire world has got to now worship this lowlife slob, Shafal he calls him, this type of person. And he, Nebuchadnezzar, senses this, and he tells him, look, well, perhaps even according to the Medrash, he doesn't sense it, and he just says, don't go back to your country and leave me, don't leave me. It may have been just his personal need for Tzidkiyahu's presence, the very same way that he had this desire for Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, and Daniel. There may even be some element of sexual desire in it. We find that the Gemara talks about him as being profoundly nichshal in Mishkav Zachur. I mean, to the point where the Gemara makes this wild story about an insane erection that Nebuchadnezzar had that was meant to be mevazeh him after he had done this to all the malachim and he had raped them, and this erection was so big that it was smashing down the kelim at our party, and the entire world was laughing at him. So that, who knows? We don't really have enough information. But what the Medrash Tanhuma continues to talk about is that this, after begging him to stay, and he promises that he'll stay, he goes back to Eretz Yisrael against the Shvuah, and then he gathers in everybody and tells them about this whole story, and he makes fun of Nebuchadnezzar. He's a slob, and he's a nut. And people overhear this and send a message to Nebuchadnezzar to say, Tzidkiyo Yoshevu Mesachek Bechai, sitting around, and he's turning you into a laughing stock. And this it says beferish, he had made him swear to God. And so this whole thing becomes now part of an ongoing story, because Nebuchadnezzar brings him, drags him now, and before killing him and doing the awful things that we find later, in which he had blinded him and just threw him into dungeon and allowed him to just die there in prison, he would feed him like an animal. He would feed him barley, like as if he were a horse. And he would also rape him. The Kodesh Baruch Hu says, this is the way you treat him. The entire world is going to be laughing at you. And so, indeed, he turns into an actual animal, and everybody talks about him as being the Cholei Shal Goyim, and the Gemara talks about Atav Ha'ariel, referring again to that strange story. All of that came because he was Mevazeh Tzidkiyo, but that's because Tzidkiyo was Mevazeh him. And so, whatever the story in its details are, the low-classiness and the physical ugliness of the acts of Nebuchadnezzar were what led him to be mevater on his shvuah. But of course, that expressed itself in ways that were geopolitical. Now, what happens is, according to the Gemara Nedarim, when he went around and he told them that the business about the rabbit, Nebuchadnezzar heard that people were being mevazeh, and he comes and he brings the entire Sanhedrin and to say, when somebody swears in the name of God, and it says beferish in the pasuk Elohim, did you not say that you will not tell this in the name of God? And he said, yes, but I went and I was shoyel on my swearing. You mean you can do that, says Nebuchadnezzar? He says, yes. So Nebuchadnezzar turns to Sanhedrin. Can you do this even when the person that was sworn to is not present? Or is it only in his presence? And the Sanhedrin says, only in his presence. And you, he says to them, why were you matred if I wasn't there? And that is where it says, already down la'aretz. He dragged them down to the dirt, because indeed they had been nikshal as well. So this is a profound story about the nature of neder and the nature of she'ela and Tzidkiyo's own expectation of integrity and his worshipful attitude towards the integrity and beauty of B'nai Yehuda. And all of it is part of the strange story of Bavel's relationship to Malchut Yehuda. Because in the end, of course, Malchut Yehuda is rebuilt in Bavel. Yet the same Yechonyo who rebuilt it is zochet to have a shar in the Beit HaMikdash that's called Shar Yechonyo, because of the fact of his godless, that he didn't want Yerushalayim, the Beit HaMikdash, to suffer. And that was the shar that he had walked out to present himself to Melech Bavel. Indeed, the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt through that Mesirut Nefesh itself, very different than what Tzidkiyo did when he attempted to escape, and instead, a godless of Yisrael turned even a king of Yisrael into a plaything in the hands of the Goyim. And for this, as we'll see, he is blamed. And so